It's time now to get behind the headlines of this week's Hendersonville Lightning with editor and publisher Bill Moss.
Good morning, everyone. Thursday morning, 5.5 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning, which means it's time for Lightning Thursdays with Bill Moss, editor and publisher of Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com. Good morning, Bill. Happy Lightning Thursday to you, sir.
Good morning, Mark. Same to you. Happy Lightning Thursday for another week of Lightning Radio.
That's right. It's on the streets, it's in your mailboxes, and it is on the radio dial this morning. Bill, let's get right to it. As usual, lots of things to talk about for local news here, and let's start out with the proposed asphalt plant in East Flat Rock, still very much part of the news, and on your front page today, the headline says, County Attorney tells Planning Board members not to reject emails on plant. Bill, tell us more about that story.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. Yeah, this is a little kerfuffle and a little bit of a subchapter of the overall asphalt plant battle. It is quite the pitched battle, to coin a phrase there, for the asphalt plant. First one since around 2000, you might remember the Grimesdale experience, which had also a big battle and ultimately resulted in an asphalt plant in that area off of Asheville Highway close to Grimesdale. That plant is up, has been running for years now. This one has looks to be a little bit of a steeper climb. And it's on a little bit of a hiatus as far as the war over the asphalt plant at the moment, because the county or the applicant actually asked for a delay in the planning board consideration, and since the planning board is not meeting in July, that won't come up until August 20 is the date of that. But this is a behind the scenes look that came to our attention, and then we got a whole bunch of emails from everybody about this.
Yeah,
public records request. Thank you very much, County Attorney Russ Burrell, who's a little bit of a public records and openness and transparency hero of this story, because you had a planning board member, Mr. Baird Blake, who had been writing back to asphalt plant opponents when they wrote directly to him and I think it's six other planning board members. They're very passionate comments and input about how much they oppose this asphalt plant, which I've neglected to say would be in East Flat Rock on the corner of Spartanburg Highway and the off-ramp of the US 25 connector if you were coming back toward Hendersonville from East Flat Rock. He wrote back direct communications with a planning board member is wholly inappropriate. And he did attach a very trying to be helpful, a notice for the appropriate way to voice your concerns, which was, I think, to attend the meeting and offer public input. You could also email the county planning staff. But folks of the East Flat Rock against the asphalt plant kind of blew the whistle on that. And so did the county attorney, Russ Burrell, who said, no, actually, you're not quite right about that, Mr. Blake. You are a planning board member, and if you choose to be a planning board member and serve, that is a public role. This is a public matter. This is a public record. It is something you must receive. You don't necessarily have to engage. You can agree or disagree. You can ignore, but basically, please don't tell the people not to comment to you.
Right.
The attorney for the asphalt plant owners, of course, got involved. I'm sorry, the asphalt plant opponents got involved as well. And he cited the First Amendment to the Constitution, which protects everyone's right to petition the government for a redress of grievances. And this is a grievance that they have, and to free speech, and to the North Carolina Constitution. And to the planning board's own rules on public input and so forth. Anyway, it all got pretty solidly settled in the corner of the public being able to comment in just about any way they would like on this asphalt plant. So interesting story, and It doesn't change the overall story too much, but we thought it was important that not just the asphalt plant folks and the planning board, but everyone know that you're allowed to comment on things.
Not
the asphalt, but Taproot Dairy or Horseshoe Farm that we'll talk about a little bit later today, or the Broadmoor Golf Course. The public is entitled to comment on public matters.
Absolutely. Bill, let's stay on this story for a moment because I find it interesting, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's the attorney for the owners of the potential asphalt plant that actually asked for a moving of the meeting into August, if I'm correct. Isn't that the truth?
That is true, yeah. I neglected to say that part. Brian Golden is the attorney for the asphalt plant owners, which is very interesting, given that, as we called him in an earlier story, Brian he was a one-time Henderson County planner, became an attorney, and has been a well-known and successful gladiator for opponents of often not in my backyard.
Yep.
Kind of rezoning request, including twice, shooting ranges, and then a third time with that proposed drug and alcohol rehab center that the Mud Creek Baptist Church had proposed. So he has switched sides, as it were, to this time to defend and advocate for Southeastern Asphalt Company and Jeff Shipman for a request that many, many homeowners and neighboring property owners are opposing. But he did ask for it. And the reason that Mr. Golden said that, the reason he gave was that homeowners and opponents and had opposed many questions that he wanted to make sure, he and the owner wanted to make sure they got all the answers to. And they were more than 100 people on that zoomed into that neighborhood compatibility meeting. And that's the source of some, but not all, of the questions. And so we know that there are many, many questions, and more probably have been piled on top of those in the time since then.
I just find that an interesting move, and I understand that they're saying they need time to answer the questions, but it also just gives the opponents of this asphalt plant more time to write letters, more time, and also potentially gives them a better opportunity, because one of their complaints was that they didn't want to have this over Zoom, because there are plenty of people in East Flat Rock who aren't necessarily adequately prepared to do this digitally. They'd rather show up to a meeting. So it's almost as if the asphalt plant is kind of playing right into their hands by moving it to August.
Well, absolutely right, because you're exactly right. This moves the, and that's just the planning board. We're not talking about the hearing before the county.
Right.
County commissioners yet. This moves this into a time, actually not hypothetically, it moves it into a time that we know that at least the Henderson County Board of Commissioners has said they are opening up meetings to an in-person form of public hearing, because they're doing that for the Taproot project. You can look at our stories at the third week or so of July. So 1 month out. So this makes this planning board meeting 1 month after that. Why would this planning board meeting, if it is obviously an advisory panel of the Henderson County Board of Commissioners, why then would the planning board meeting 1 month later not also have a public meeting? I'm guessing it might very well be at East Henderson High School, which has an auditorium, just as the Taproot project is going to be heard at West Henderson High School in its auditorium.
Interesting. So, of course, you'll stay on this story. Let's stay on this same type of subject, Bill. We've talked about this a little bit, but the story continues. And of course, your headline writer. I I always love the headlines in the Lightning, and here's one: County to tee up plan to save Broadmoor. Yeah. Of course, the airport is buying the Broadmoor Golf Course. Talk to us about this story, Bill.
Yeah, the airport is in really the final days, I would almost say, of due diligence of this agreement, really, to buy the Broadmoor Golf Links, which is a nice public. I think it's depicted as affordable, very good. Bob Davies, the mayor pro tem of Fletcher, and I guess a golfer, described it as the best public golf course in all of Western North Carolina. Other golfers spoke to or wrote to the Board of Commissioners last week and made a passionate defense of keeping Broadmoor as a golf course. And in the course of about a 45-minute long discussion or longer, the county commissioners pretty much tried to leverage the airport, and the airport director, Lou Blywas, was there attending the meeting to describe this proposed purchase, pretty much tried to leverage Mr. Blywas and the Asheville Regional Airport Authority into a position where we will, they said, one way or another, we want to save Broadmoor as a golf course and an event center. We don't care if y'all buy it. That's fine. We understand why you want to buy it. This kind of goes to one other thing I've already mentioned a couple times, Taproot, where the airport says we don't want that big development because that's in the runway approach and it's too dangerous and the homeowners are going to complain about noise and jet fuel or whatever. Well, this also comes under that same rubric in some way because the airport, they don't really care if golf goes on there. I don't think you can hit a golf shot quite so high as to get in the way of an incoming or outgoing airplane. But they don't want a big condo development there. And so their interest is in making it no more intense development than it is right now. So anyway, that was the resolution as far as it went in last week's meeting of the topic, in that right now Henderson County, possibly Henderson County Parks and Rec, and the Airport Authority are trying to figure out a way to keep Broadmoor a golf course.
So let me ask you this, Bill. If the airport, when the airport buys this, that's going to happen ultimately. When the airport buys this, what kind of teeth do the commissioners have to make them keep it a golf course? I mean, they can't really do anything about it once the airport owns it. If the airport wants to change it to something else, they can do it. It's their property, right?
They seem to be somewhat toothless on that very good question, Mark. The airport did not have to seek the authority, the consent, as I understand it, and as both sides, as both the county attorney and Mr. Blywas described it, to make this decision, to purchase this piece of property. It just had to notify Henderson County that, oh, by the way, we're buying Broadmoor and we're a nonprofit, so there goes your, you know, $5 million of value off the tax roll. And by the way, Mr. Davies or Fletcher said Fletcher would lose it. So probably it would be a far greater percentage of Fletcher's overall take from the ad valorem tax than it would Henderson County's. While that is true, Henderson County has a way of having a strong relationship with all surrounding bodies and various agencies, whether it's sewer authorities, which they also have been working with recently. Anyway, they have a way of having a strong relationship. There's a couple of, I think there's two Henderson County appointees to the Greater Asheville Regional Airport Authority. So not really teeth necessarily, but a lot of ability to influence things now and in the future, I think is the best way describe it politically, if not under the law.
Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense. Folks, there is so much more news to cover on Lightning Radio, and we'll continue in just a bit here on WTZQ.
Lewis Williams & Sons is the area's largest distributor of mobile home supplies. Whether you need doors, windows, plumbing, or skirting, Lewis Williams & Sons has anything you need for your mobile home. Visit Lewis Williams & Sons in sunny and friendly East Flat Rock at 300 West King Street, just down the street from Case & Builder Supply. Open Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, Saturday, 8 till noon. Lewis Williams & Sons, 692-8216 or online at lewiswilliams.com.
And we are back with Lightning Radio with Bill Moss, editor and publisher of Hendersonville Lightning and hendersonvillelightning.com. Bill, there's so much news. We got to cover some more things, too, that are so recent they weren't able to make it into this week's print edition of the Lightning. Let's start with the governor's announcement yesterday about requiring face masks now in the public situations where it is not possible to social distance.
Yeah, for those that are unhappy about some of these restrictions, then their unhappiness, unfortunately, will continue. They can't go back to the gym. They can't go to the bar. Because the governor paused, as he called it, we call it in the headline, he basically extended the safer at home phase two restrictions for two more weeks. Two more weeks, but more over than that, more visibly, more dramatically for some people is this face mask order. So you go outside now to your Publix, your Harris Teeter, your Ingles or whatever, your supermarket, or to your Walmart or Target, you're supposed to have a face mask. That's the rule now. This rule is that you must have a face mask because our cases are increasing, and we had a choice from the governor's office of what slide we could post of slides that they made available to us and every other media, of course. And the one that we thought was most relevant was the one about, you know, you can argue, Mark, as people do, even people up to the president of the United States, that there's more cases because there's more testing. And that's fine. But the one thing we know about the inability of people on either side is that you can't spin numbers of the COVID, and one number you can't spin is hospitalization. So if you say, well, there's more cases because there's more testing, and so that doesn't really mean it's worse, that's fine. But if there's more hospitalizations, that seems pretty dispositive in terms of whether the problem's worse than it was the day before.
Yeah.
So this shows the increase in hospitalization. Not a huge, it's a steady up ramp, but it's an up ramp and it's not flat. That's the problem. It's not flat or going down. And so it's an up ramp of, I'm looking here at the graph of, 575, it looks like, to close to 800, maybe over 800. There's your problem. And so, at least according to the governor, and this would tend to support that. So it's face mask time.
Well, yeah, it is face mask time. But as I'm listening to the governor yesterday, I'm thinking to myself, okay, I just have a feeling the same people who have been wearing masks are going to continue wearing masks, and the people that haven't been wearing masks are probably going to continue not wearing masks.
Yeah, I just think it's very interesting. I mean, I'll be outside somewhere, I'm sure, later today to make a picture or something, and I'm going to really have my eyes peeled for that. And I do actually have a question, and we'll try to bird dog this and get some more direct answers as far as tell me if I'm right about this. Was the rule like you wear the face mask in public? And was this part of it where you cannot socially distance? In other words, I guess I'm saying you get out of your car at the Harris Teeter and you start walking, into the store, but you're no closer than 50 feet from anybody. It's not effective then, I wouldn't think, but maybe it is. We'll try to find that out. Do you know?
Well, my understanding of it is that it was said that you wear a face mask where it is not possible to socially distance.
Right. That's what I thought too. And the other thing I'd say about that, because we are just, we're talking about the face mask rule, but I too listened. I didn't get to hear all of it, but I was able to listen on the radio when the governor and Dr. Cohen, the DHHS secretary, made this announcement. But the governor in particular, he kept saying over and over, and I did think it was a good point. He said, this is for economic recovery. This is a way that's cheap and easy and free, basically. for all of us to participate in let's say, flattening this hospitalization curve, especially, and having fewer cases. Particularly, I thought he made it's an obvious one, but a good one, that particularly those of us that are walking around with the virus, not knowing that we have it.
Yeah, right.
Because it's not, you're not just protecting yourself. You're obviously, if you have the face mask, you're supposed to be protecting others. So I thought he made a good point that this is what, in his view, this is what's needed to boost this economic recovery. It's not against, in other words, to the argument that, well, this will ruin business. He's saying this is the way to get business back to much more like it was last January.
Yeah. It will be interesting to see, to be out in the community and see you know, who is and who is not. Ultimately, let's go to politics. Well, it's all politics, I guess. Yeah. Let's talk about the election this week, Bill. The Madison Cawthorn landslide victory over Linda Bennett for this this runoff. Was that a surprise to you at all?
The magnitude of it. Certainly was. His very strong, I think, 85% showing, 75%, 75.1 to 24.9% in Henderson County was not. But the magnitude of it and just really the repudiation by this Republican and some independent voter electorate of Linda Bennett was surprising to me, given that she was a choice of Mark Meadows, who, of course, was the incumbent congressman who resigned last December right before filing closed, and was the choice and had the strong and widely publicized endorsement of President Trump. And so when the dust, or even before the dust, really settled by late Tuesday night and all day Wednesday, Hendersonville, Henderson County, and Madison Cawthorn was the center of the universe, you might say, in a lot of the post-election analysis, because it talked about that this was the race that broke Trump's unbroken winning streak of winning in a Republican primary of whatever horse he put his money on and publicly endorsed. That horse was the one that won. Didn't happen Tuesday night. So now we'll see. I've seen other coverage. I'm not the one that researched this and found that Cawthorn would become, because right now at this moment, Mark, he's not eligible to serve in Congress,
right,
and won't be for about five more weeks because you must be 25. Then he'll turn, Madison will turn 25. He would become eligible to serve in Congress, and then he faces Bo Davis in the November election. But this sets up, there'll be some national coverage of this because there's interest in it. There was anyway, just because it's filling the seat of Mark Meadows, who's now, of course, nationally known as President Trump's chief of staff. It's interesting because it's possibly a little bit more flippable, a little bit more swingable, still very Republican, but depending on what's going on November 3rd of 2020, could it be a pickup of Democrats? That's also something that the national press will be looking at, and of course we will too. So yeah, lots, a lot more of, a lot more to chew on with this upcoming race. It's going to become a good race for all those reasons.
Yeah, it's going to be real interesting next few weeks. And also, just want to correct one thing. When we were talking about the face masks a moment ago, the governor's new order, it is for 3 weeks. It is to stay in this current phase and to wear masks. And I believe it is for 3 weeks.
Super.
Yeah, okay. Let's touch on a couple of more things, Bill, before we finish up. Peter Hans, HHS graduate, is now leading the UNC education system.
Yeah, it's so fun. And yeah, it's so cool that, that, you know, Peter Hans, we wrote about him in a couple times, but in the last time we wrote about him with this much detail was, I think it was around the beginning of the Lightning, around 2012 or so, when he became the first Republican to be appointed to chair the UNC Board of Governors. Well, he's gone on to many other successes. Always is just really highly regarded as a nonpartisan, pragmatic, fix things, get them done, bring everybody together kind of leader. He's coming off, I think it's really just 2 years as president of the North Carolina Community College System, and with a lot of successes there, including a plan that was really good that's in effect now that makes it easier to transfer those community college credits into any of the 17 campuses of the UNC system, which is highly, highly regarded, as we say in this story, and as we say in an editorial, highly regarded nationally as one of the best systems of higher ed in the country. So last Friday, Peter Hans, Hendersonville High School graduate and a part of the Bearcat Nation, was named president of the UNC system. It's a big, big deal. And this was praised by the governor. You don't see this often by the governor, by Phil Berger, the Senate leader, by House Speaker Tim Moore, by former UNC President Erskine Bowles, a Democrat, by immediate past UNC President Margaret Spellings, who you recall was George W. Bush's education secretary. So great for Peter Hans. Another feather in the cap of the Henderson County public school system, of the Hendersonville High School legacy of just really turning out kids and that become a lot of success stories across the nation and even country.
Yep.
I mean, across an even world in some cases.
Yep, absolutely. Bill, let's touch on one more story. Of course, the Lightning's full of many more stories, but one of the things I love about the Hendersonville Lightning is the way you shine the light on folks who make a difference in our community. And the recent, the 2020 Robin Ginger Cranford Community Service Award for the United Way was given to very much people such as that. And that's Donna and Sandy Hasty. And you've got the story right here in the Lightning.
Yeah, we do. And thanks to the United Way for putting together a terrific little video, about maybe it was 15 minutes or so. And so they didn't really send out a news release that I ever saw. They sent out this announcement, and then I started watching the video, and the quotes from it were so good. They had, of course, Denise Cumby-Long, and they had Julia Hockenberry of the Boys and Girls Club. They had Tom Merle, who had worked with them in the United Way and the Hendersonville Symphony. They had Bill Humlecker, the Stuck in the Late Middle columnist for the Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com. He had the one that we plucked out for a headline, saying that on any number of occasions during the years I was involved with the Hendersonville Symphony Orchestra, when we needed something important done, when we needed broad shoulders, we could trust the HSO turned to Donna and Sandy Hasty. The Hasties, Bill said, are a formidable combined force of nature, ultra capable. If Sandy and Donna were on board, we knew we would succeed. And so and it's got Mark Warwick, past United Way campaign chair, and Paige Posey also endorsing in that really good video tribute to Donna and Sandy. So I join all y'all in congratulating them and thanking them for the great, great work they've done. All of those comments were, they hit the nail on the head, because, boy, they really work. They're philanthropic, but they also really work.
Yeah, we Paige and I were very much honored to be asked to be a part of that video presentation for Donna and Sandy, and again, great work and very well deserved. Bill, there is still so much more in this week's Lightning. People got to pick up their copy. How do they do it?
Well, they go around physically now with a mask now, I guess, to any of the Lightning Orange racks all around the county, or to our Lightning single copy sales partners, such as convenience stores and grocery stores, such as Publix. Or by we're still continuing to see a surge of people joining the Hendersonville Lightning, wanting to get that all access deal for $59.99 per year, which of course gives you the Hendersonville Lightning copy delivered today to your house via U.S. mail, but also gives you access to HendersonvilleLightning.com. So, and to get that, go on to the website HendersonvilleLightning.com and click on subscribe, or call Jan at 698-0407.